Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one-coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3. This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9/1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
It is Tuesday, the 4th of February. Welcome to Viewpoint Talk Radio, Europe's current affairs program, with a panel of invited guests. We're discussing the issues of the day today with you for the next 2 hours. If you want to get involved with the show, then these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And joined in the studio, we had a last minute drop out, so we haven't got a full panel. But I'm joined in the studio by our first time this year, Alf. Alf, good morning to you.
Good morning, Giles.
Oh, the microphone's very high today. There you go.
Yeah, it's very high because
must have been a very tall person.
I didn't want to bang my head on it.
Yes, well,
as we were talking about banging heads,
before. We were indeed, and there'll be quite a few banging heads, as I suppose, throughout the show. On today's show, we'll be looking at we're into the first 20 days or so of President Trump. It's been an interesting time as well. So Keir Starmer is over at the moment meeting with what he calls his European partners. We'll be discussing those and plus anything else that's, if you've got something that's crossing your radar as well, you want to have a get your viewpoint across, then you know the numbers. But first of all, let's have a look at what's happening in the papers and what today's headlines say in the UK. The Times and the Daily Mail have different interpretations on the Prime Minister's visit to Brussels for talks to reset Britain's relationship with Europe. PM won't back EU in trade war is the headline in the Times, while the Mail opts for what a time to be crawling back to the UK. The Sun's editorial says seeing Sir Keir Starmer at a meeting of European leaders has the diehard Remainers as giddy as toddlers on New Year's Eve. The editorial of the Daily Express urges the Prime Minister to stick with the Atlantic Alliance, but The Guardian suggests closer ties with the EU could help boost sluggish economic growth. The Prime Minister's political troubles are highlighted by a YouGov poll covered in the Times, which puts Reform UK on 25%, 1 point ahead of Labour and 4 points ahead of the Conservatives. The paper says Reform's lead is within the margin of error, but is likely to generate alarm amongst Labour and Tory strategists in the run-up to May's local elections. The Financial Times reports that officials within government have drawn up contingency plans for possible retaliation in the event that US President Donald Trump should impose tariff on UK exports. One official tells the paper, "We are looking forward to working closely with President Trump, but ministers will always do what is best for the national interest." Front page of The Eye says the cabinet is split on plans for a Brexit migration deal for young people. It says Brussels is keen to allow reciprocal rights for under 30s to live and work on the continent, but the Home Office is apparently wary of its impact on immigration figures. Sir Keir is facing a growing backlash within Labour over the potential approval of a large oil field west of the Shetland Islands. This is in The Guardian. It says the Treasury is minded to support the Rosebank scheme, but MPs are nervous about breaking the spirit of a manifesto pledge of no new oil or gas licences. The development was originally given a provisional go-ahead in 2023. The Daily Telegraph's front page features a picture of Jack Lopresti, the former deputy chairman of the Conservative Party. He's now in Ukraine after losing his seat at the general election and says he wants to fight on the front line, having joined the Foreign Legion. The front page of both The Sun and The Daily Mirror feature the same image of the Princess of Wales taken by six-year-old Prince Louis to mark World Cancer Day. Kate stands on a felled tree with her arms outstretched. And finally, volunteers clearing up flood damage in Grantham, Lincolnshire, have been shocked to come across antique litter, which has risen up as a result of high water. That's according to The Eye. The hoard included a 160-year-old empty beer bottle, as well as a can of Diet Pepsi from the 80s. Ian Simmons, who was among the team cleaning up, tells the paper it was a powerful reminder of the long-lasting consequences of littering. Those front pages again from the top. Financial Times, markets rebound after Sheinbaum's talk with Trump's brings tariffs pay-up pause. Meanwhile, this is the US President Donald Trump halting sweeping tariffs on Mexico. The Times leads with NHS withholds Nottingham report to protect killers' privacy. And it also says the PM won't back the EU in a trade war. The Daily Mail, what a time to be crawling back to the EU. The iPaper, UK cabinet tensions on Brexit migration deal for under 30s as Germany makes new plea to Starmer. The Guardian, Starmer faces Labour revolt over backing for oil field. Daily Telegraph, a picture of the ex-Tory chief who's joined the Ukraine fight. But it's also Rayner to set rules on Islam and free speech. This is Labour's Angela Rayner. She's going to create a council on Islamophobia and lining up former Tory Attorney General Dominic Grieve to lead it. The paper says the body will advise on an official definition of anti-Muslim discrimination and will provide information to ministers on how to tackle it. Daily Express leads with a 15-year-old boy's knife to death in school attack. This is Harvey Wilgoose, who was killed in a messaging row in a school in Sheffield. The Metro, jailbreaking spy for Iran, handed 14 years. Dangerous fool who put lives at risk. The Sun, say trees, mummy. Poignant pic by Louis VI. This is the picture of the Princess of Wales. And that's also on the front of Mirror, on the Mirror as well, because this is what today is the World Cancer Day. And it says, Kate, get back to nurture rather than nature. And finally, the Daily Star, as always, doing something completely different. So the Star leads with today. Daily Star has its own take on US foreign policy as it mocks up a poster saying missing brain alongside a picture of Trump. It says the errant cerebrum was last spotted sparking a global trade war, spooking financial markets and accusing baffled Britain of being out of line. So the hunt for the leader of the world's errant cerebrum, missing brain, last spotted being back something crazy, sparking a level trade war, spooking financial markets and accusing a battle Britain of being out of line. And those, for better, worse and brutal brain cells, are your headlines on this Tuesday, the 4th of February.
Viewpoint
with Giles Brown.
Always lively. 952-784-4000. If you want to get your VoIP across, joined in the studio by Alf Brewer. As I said before, good morning to you, Alf.
Hello, and for all those who'd never miss me, I am back. I even put a refill into my House of Lords pen.
Oh, I say.
Little crown.
Well, that's very, I'm feeling we are indeed honoured.
Absolutely.
I just sort of grab whatever pencils are around from, you know, from...
No, this is all name-dropping. So
is it?
It is a House of Lords pen, and it was presented to me, given to me by...
Mandelson?
Baroness Lynn Golding, who was the wife of the guy who was my political mentor
right. When
I was very young, John Golding.
Oh, yeah, okay.
He was also my general secretary, who I got helped get elected. I was his election manager, I argue. Which is why I've always, because people go, so why didn't you go into politics? It's called, because I was a kingmaker. Because the one thing about the kingmaker is the kingmaker never dies. Long live the king. The king is dead, long live the king. But the kingmaker is always there. Because when the king dies, somebody has to be there
All right.
to make the next king. So I was always the guy in the background who was...
So, the, you know, the Henry Kissinger.
Yeah, I suppose it's, yeah, not quite as big as him, though.
I know, I remember going, being sitting in the public gallery of the, in the Palace of Westminster, and people, you know, if you've never been to Parliament, you don't sort of, you don't get to look at the whole thing, even with the TV cameras they have now, you don't actually get the full effect of what it's like in there. And it's just the people sort of wandering in and out. And I remember Keith, because Keith Joseph was there at that time, that dates me, so it'd be 83.
Yeah, early
school trip down there. You see, has sixth form, and we were stunned because he was just like literally flitting in the background, in like behind the arras. It was quite something. But yeah, anyway. So talking to Kingmaker,
I stood there enjoying like Eric Heffer and John Golding talking about what bets they were putting on the latest race. the people that are there, which is why I always say, yes, MPs are strange people. You have to be to do the job. But, you know, they're normal human beings, most of them, and most of them don't lie. They attempt not to lie. So when everybody wants to have a go at them, you understand these people... Like they're slagging off Starmer at the moment because he's this, that, and
well, it's
and
not been what. A kid.
He's just a normal bloke in his style. He has a personality bypass, but you know, what he's trying to do is coming from the heart of him and his family and what he's trying to do for the country. He's not setting out. And then you listen to, for my sins, I do these stupid things. I sit there watching Prime Minister's Questions.
Yeah.
And I'm watching Kimmy. Right, I may be politically opposite to where she's coming from, Badenoch, but it's just, even I'm getting to the stage of saying some of what goes on in the House is just childish. Stupidly childish. I've got to score a point over the Prime Minister, so I'm going to raise this issue. You know, we've raised the issue. Mm-hmm. What they never explain to people in real terms is how much time and effort. So she can't keep popping up every 2 minutes saying, and the Prime Minister this, and the Prime Minister. It looks like that. She's only allowed 6 questions in Prime Minister's Questions.
Yeah.
What's his name? The Lib Dem guy, Davey. He's only allowed, Davey, he's only allowed 2 questions. The SNP are only allowed 1 question. So, and much of the others, technically what used to happen is you'd all put your stuff in and they'd draw it out of a hat and you get to ask a question. And then all of a sudden, I can spot them because I've been doing it for so long.
Yeah.
But there's the planted question that technically is just someone standing up and saying, does the Prime Minister agree with me that we're running the NHS brilliantly?
Yeah.
And of course, it gives him a platform to talk about what they're doing in the NHS.
Yeah.
And it's so false. The real ones are the people who stand up and say, I've got this hospital in my constituency and the roof's falling off and all of that. Usually it's from opposition MPs, but because the majority is so great to Labour, I don't know how many it is now. I think it's 3 questions for Labour MPs to 1 for every other party put together because the majority is that big. Also, what I think is going wrong. And the media, Giles, I love the media.
Yeah, but you see, the reason is, you know, you see, Baden not getting up and making a point and the Yabu sucks and the whole thing, but they know, you know, does the Prime Minister agree with me that, you know, the daffodils are looking particularly splendid this year? Yeah. And that allows them to get their soundbite across.
Yes, of
course. That's the thing, because you've got to be looking for...
Yes, of course.
You know, that bit where...
Badenoch is trying to make... Well, I think it was either a second or a third time. She tried to make about 6... In her 6 questions, 5 or 6 different issues were rolled in. And even the commentators, you know, the people sitting on the outside who chat about it afterwards were saying, she's missing the point. When you've got Prime Minister's questions, it's about an issue, specifically an issue, that you wish to technically embarrass the government about, i.e. how do I get populism back on my side? And then she picks an issue that, and technically, I suppose, at the moment, almost everything that a Tory MP raises, not just Labour, the SNP, the Lib Dems, they all stand up and go, yeah, but when you was in power, it was a mess because you did this, that and the other. So the Tories may not, you know, and which is always the way. We're going to try not to oppose for the sake of opposition, is what Badenoch's been saying. We're not just going to disagree for the sake of disagreeing. And then she disagrees for the sake of disagreeing. And you go, when are you going to change? When is it going to change? And all you get from, I'm not going to say Starmer, but all of the time there's this, I think, misunderstanding that Joe Public like to hear the jokey stuff, you know, the taking the mickey out of each other. I don't think the public enjoy any of that. I think the public want to hear, this is the issue, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, but the thing is, but we have seen a seismic change in the way that our politicians do business. As you know, as I said before to you, you know, I was a Conservative with a small c. So, you know, the party up...
Good plants.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you very much. And my tomato's looking rather splendid this year, thank you. No, but, you know, between... I mean, there was that whole thing about Sir Nicholas Soames, which wasn't that... Actually, I used to think it was quite funny. No, I'm not sure about Soames and John Preston. And he used to, you know, the...
Prescott's
crew. And he used to shout out when he walked into the thing, you know, to Elijah and Tonic, please, Steward.
Yeah, you know, personally. Yeah, but that wasn't... In the public eye,
no,
on the television.
But, okay, but we...
So there's loads and loads of those anecdotal things, loads of them. What's his name? The carpetbagger MP who was around for years. He always used to
Ken
go...
Ken Clark? Ken Clark?
No. Labour right. MP. Used to always sit on the front bench, the second tier of the front bench.
Got the Beast of Bolsover.
Yeah, Beast of Bolsover. He sat on the edge seat.
Yeah.
To get those seats, you have to go into the house for what is called prayers.
Yeah.
Like, this is a guy who is more than an atheist. I'm not knocking that. It's just he's not religious. But in order to get one of the good seats or one of the better seats, you go in for prayers because then you can get a seat and that's your seat for PMQs.
Right.
And the Bolsover guy always sat on the end seat, always sat, but he would have to go in for prayers. And
yeah, Skinner, wasn't it?
Skinner, yeah. And Diane Abbott used to walk past him and say, I hope you've been good today. And she would say that every time.
Mm.
So it wasn't something, and you go, so that's jokey, but it's not on the television. It's not part of the debate. And when you see, I can't tell you how many, I sit there, my missus just goes, you know, they're at it again. When they go, ear, shouting and hollering, and someone's trying to speak, and every now and again, what's his name, stands up, the speaker
Lindsay.
Stands up and says, yeah, Lindsay Hoyle. So that's another thing, isn't it? Yeah, the suffering he had for having a girl's name. Was unbelievable. Seriously. So I know Lindsay.
Yeah?
I know him personally. And the abuse he suffered when he was an MP, backbench MP, was unbelievable.
Because that's because the House is part. I mean, a lot of it is like the old boys' club, and it's the old, you know, it's like the most out of control public school fourth form you've ever seen.
Gentlemen's club, not the boys' club, it's the gentlemen's club where they used to go.
You know,
I've been to some of them as well. You just go weird. I was sitting there, it was absolutely boiling hot. I went for a meeting in one of these places,
so
a union meeting of all things. So they decided because one of the unions used to hold a thing for one of these gentlemen's clubs. It was absolutely steaming, but you couldn't take your jacket off until lunch had been served.
Absolutely.
You sit there for like 2 hours, yeah, and they were all drinking gin and tonics.
Yes, like that. British Empire, dear boy.
I was listening to Dave Hodgson earlier, he said, and he went to one of these gin and tonic things and asked for a pint of lager. And I'm thinking, I sat there in one of these posh places doing the thing, and they were all drinking gin and tonic and whatever they were drinking, union blokes.
Yeah.
And I went, any chance of a glass of beer?
Yes.
And the waiter guy just looked at me with complete disdain. I never got one. I got a glass. Of water. But anyway, yes, so it's like it's the old general. And I don't think the public appreciate it, and two, I don't think they understand all that, because unless you've been in that environment, it doesn't mean anything, does it? It just means it's a rabble of blokes and women shouting and hollering at each other for no particular reason other than to belittle.
Shouting and hollering at each other. Yeah. However, there has to be a certain amount of shouting and hollering at the moment in the Houses of Parliament, because somebody like Badenoch, who, you know, everyone was very surprised that, you know, Lamy didn't get the, because of tactical voting in Jenrick and the whole situation, which caved in on them. But this new report that comes out, two things that have struck me here about the one thing about, you know, sort of reform being 4 points within whatever. And then, you may laugh.
I do laugh.
And you do.
I also laugh. It's a Tory thing. We'll talk about the elections later, but go on, carry on.
But also the papers seem to have got hold of this report that says that X amount of young people would rather have a strong leader. Absolutely. They would rather live in a benign dictatorship. Now, we've joked I've joked about this show being a benign dictatorship for about the past 10 years. But that is a worrying signal, I think, behind how young people are viewing politics. And also, if you think about what happened over in the States and, you know, all those young people who were apparently getting behind Kamala Harris and the issues that were front and center in their minds, you know, trans right or whatever, diversity, trans rights, the whole thing, turned out to be a million miles away from what, you know, somebody in the Rust Belt is thinking.
And
that's one flip side on the Democrats. And then the other side, you've got this whole, you know, the young people, the young men who apparently Baron Trump was appealing to, go figure. And then in the UK, we're having this whole situation where people are saying, oh, well, you know, the old joke is don't vote, the government will get in. But also you've got people like saying, well, you know, for reform and Farage, because it's a very, because the Farage is playing in reform, are using the politics of referendum, of Brexit.
And I don't think it's any of that. Personally, I was listening today on Kay Burley in the morning.
Yeah.
They had a couple of young guys who weren't politically aligned, but they were talking about, obviously, politics and why young people get involved and what they get involved for. What are the issues for young people, etc. Very articulate young men and very listenable to. And what really come out of all of it and what they followed on with is that it would appear, remembering, of course, I think now it must be up to about 36 or 37 years of age.
Yeah.
40% of the people under that age have never voted in their life. Never voted. Not voted occasionally. Never voted. Not even in 97 with Blair's come down. Not in 2010 when Brown was taken out by the Alliance. You know, there's this continuing 40% plus who didn't vote. When I was a political organiser, it was people under the age of 21. Mm-hmm. So every year, it goes up a year. It goes, you know, in age. So now, we must be up to about 35, 36 year olds. 40% don't vote, which means that whatever government is elected, they're elected on, technically, a minority of the country. There's always been a government. The very few governments get elected by 50% plus in real terms. So, like the last election, everybody talks now, oh, Labour had a landslide.
Mm.
And you go, yeah, but look at the reality. Labour got less votes at the last election than they did in 2010 when Gordon Brown technically lost. He didn't lose. He just never had enough for a majority in the House of Commons. And the Lib Dems got with the Tories and it became the alliance. Worst thing that happened to the UK, in my opinion, politically, ever. Having said that,
yep.
Today they're rubbishing it and saying, you know, Labour aren't popular with this and Labour aren't popular with that and Labour ain't popular and they're losing popularity. And you go, they never had all this popularity. They won the election with, what was it, 32.2% of the vote. Something ridiculous. Less than a third of the election. Oh, Giles, you nearly fell off. Is there an arm missing on your arm?
Yeah, I was doing
Sorry, listeners, you can't see it, but Giles...
I was doing my best Parkinson there and going for the side arm and missed the arm completely. I almost took my rib out.
So what... Now we've got is we've got a government that was put there by less than a third of the electorate. And they certainly ain't representative in any terms of Northern Ireland, because Northern Ireland don't have the same mainstream political parties that there is in England and Wales and Scotland. They're not really representative of Wales, because it's so strong Labour, effectively think they can, and now they've been given autonomy. And all that happens is the Tories turn up and say, this is what Labour do when they get in control. Look at the state of the Welsh Health Service. Look at the state of Welsh education. Look at the state. And you go, it's a weeny little country in a huge country. And of course, they're operating. And then on top of that, Scotland. So when does the Labour Party, seriously, in Parliament, represent Scotland?
But also in the way that these things... When they go to these polls, you know, 21% of people think that Starmer is. And what a day to go crawling back to the EU. Well, if you say to people, it's very convenient, obviously, because of the press is, you know, most of the press is, so we say, right of centre, to put it mildly. So if you say to a bunch of people, do you like green apples or red apples? And more of them say, oh, I like green apples and red apples. They'll say, you know, red apples sing of the past. Absolutely. Say voters, you know?
Absolutely. And that's the way the media then interprets what these happen.
And you're always going to get that, because it's about, I mean...
Yeah, but the interpretation at the moment, why is it that the public are so gullible about it? Just understand, Labour didn't get into power on some landslide of popularity. They didn't. They got into power because the Tories lost their way. And what's happening now is that young people are listening to, and I listen to lots of these different things, and my view is young people are now saying, actually, we do want to get involved in politics, or we want to stay getting involved in politics, but there isn't anybody that represents us. So neither of the two main parties, I say two, the Tories and Labour, they don't represent what we're looking for, and the alternative, which is the Lib Dems.
Yeah, worse.
Well, they're just all over the show with everything, so we can never find a path. What's come along now is Farage. Farage, well, he hasn't just come along. They've been coming for ages. And they're quite clear. They're quite clear about what they stand for, even though people don't like it. And their main platform is the immigration issue. It always has been, and it always will be. But they have lots of little side issues next to it. And young people are saying, well, we don't like what Labour are doing and saying. We don't like what the Tories are doing and saying. The Lib Dems are a waste of space because they're in and out like a fiddler's elbow.
But
the SNP only represent people in Scotland. So what can we do? Well, we'll start a new party. Well, this guy comes along and starts a new party. Not only that, it's the only party that's completely undemocratic. And yet they love it.
Yeah,
it's
because
owned by Farage.
Because you said that just a minute ago, you said that the people are they're going into, they're looking at politicians and they're not voting. You know, they don't get involved because there's nobody that represents them. The danger is their views. But the danger is that rather than that, they just get apathetic and then they go for and then they'll say and egged on by whatever dark forces in the media are saying, oh, we need a sweeping change. Like, yeah, we need a sweeping change. And the next thing, you know, bang, you've got them all voting for, you know, a strong leader.
Worse than that, you end up with anarchy. And I know I've had this discussion.
Apathy or anarchy?
Anarchy.
Because what's worse, apathy or anarchy then?
Apathy is people who just don't participate. So whoever is participating, whoever is making the decisions, are making the decisions. Anarchy means that you do stand for election, you do win elections, and then when you get into power, you do nothing with the power. I've had this discussion privately with Andreas. Andreas, if you're listening, I hope you get better soon. It's called when the Spanish Civil War started, one of the issues was about the anarchists were growing in size. Yeah. And everybody goes, oh, no, that didn't happen. It was about Spanish politics. It was about Francoism. It was about this. And I go, no. One of the major issues was that the anarchists who got into power, not at national level, certainly at local level, and were starting to not make decisions, which is as bad in its own way as communists coming into power and creating, because there's no democracy in a communist country. It's we are the people, we are the power, we make the decisions, you will abide. And if you don't, we'll do something about it. And so the anarchists were the same, except for they didn't use the threats, you know, the violent threats and things like that. Violence did happen, but that's the danger. The danger is not you tip over to it. Apathy already exists in UK, in Spanish, in European politics. Apathy already exists. Too many people don't vote.
Could you say, though, that, you know, you're talking about anarchists, but could you say that those who get into systems, get into power, get into debates, get into referendums or referenda, whatever you want to call them, and then just cause, I'll call it mischief. You know, and that's a true anarchist, because they're causing disruption.
They're not anarchists, because what you're talking about are people who are making decisions and asking you
disrupting things.
But they're asking people to follow them and agree with them. The fact that lots of people don't agree with them doesn't make them wrong, and the fact that, you know, respect or whatever it is, I don't know why they call them respect, because they're disrespectful. But having said that, this is. A group of people who are saying, we're going to offer an alternative to the Tories, and they're saying things that you know, people like me go, wow, that's just abhorrent what you're doing. Similar to some of the stuff with Trump, what you're doing is abhorrent. The difference is they stand for election, they win elections, and then they take decisions. What anarchists don't do is take decisions. That's the problem. And people then go, we've got these people in power, but nothing's happening. And it gets worse. And what then happens is it descends into, which is what it did in my argument in Spain.
Right.
It descends into other political groupings getting together and creating new types of governments. And in the case of Spain, I mean, it's the next thing to communism.
Yeah, but
you get a dictatorship.
But
people wanted it, by the way. They didn't disagree with Franco.
A lot of people disagree with Franco and they fled across the border to France.
A lot of people disagree with him, but he still come to power and he still stayed in power.
He came to power as the result of a civil war.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But
that's hardly a just and democratic way of, you know.
I didn't say there was any democracy involved.
Yeah.
But what happened after, I mean, I talked to some of my old Spanish mates and they go, oh, we should never have, you know, Franco should come back or
that's the rose-colored binoculars that people look at, like the 60s were always great and swinging the whole thing, everybody had a bleeding mini in the thing and they were dating Twiggy, not if you were from Rochdale, they weren't,
or not if you were from East London,
exactly. So therefore, but we look back at the past.
Absolutely.
I was listening to this will make you smile, all right. I still got CDs. Listen, if I could play vinyl in the car, I would do, okay.
Yeah.
So I got CDs. And of course, with CDs, you collect them and you throw them in bits and you're not sure what's going on. And I flung on a CD, which I burnt myself. And it was obviously a 70s collection that I'd done or I'd picked up or something, right? Yeah. And the first thing that comes, and bear with me, listeners, on this one, because it was Sweet and Blockbuster.
All right.
Right, now. And I just remember when I was but a callow youth, in fact, probably a toddler or something like that. But I remember that, you know, I remember what Sweet looked like. you know, with the makeup and the whole thing, and yeah,
long blonde hair,
yeah, better
one with a skirt on,
exactly, and also the fact that there was, like, you know, it was Clockwork Orange, it was Mega Violence everywhere, and people were saying the '70s, then, you know, the youth have gone mad, this band and the yeah. whole thing, yeah. you know, looks like, not, you know, in the immortal words of Bowie, not sure if he's a boy or a girl, yeah. so. And yet people are going, oh, you know, the '70s, everybody, if it only was like that now. And it's like, this is, you know, this is absolute poppycock.
Absolutely. So, which is why, if you come back to
Cesare, so you can't say that Franco, people say, oh, yeah, it was great for Franco.
I said,
oh,
some of my older Spanish guys.
I know. I'm not saying that you are, Alf, because I'm saying that anybody, like, it's the whole thing that Dean DeVox are doing. But again, and going back to the point about, you know, people starting parties or whatever. I mean, if you look at Ciudadanos, you look at Podemos, I mean, they're all gone now. Yeah. And like 20 years ago, that was the new. It's like the SDP.
That's because they were populist parties who forgot that they were populist parties and forgot the populism, which is why Reform is growing, because they started as a populist party against Europe.
Yeah,
UKIP is where they started, yeah. and they've moved it on, and they've changed their name, and they've changed some of their speaking, and they've changed some of their. What they've never changed is we're anti-immigration. Never changed. And yet the British public still go, oh, let's have more of them, because they're saying some good things now, and they've got, is it 5 MPs or something?
Yeah, but that's scary, because Lee 30P Anderson was.
Yeah, and you just go, wow. Well, not only that, what's the geezer who's their so-called treasurer or
Till?
Him.
Yeah, I interviewed him.
And Farage, of all people, sits in the House of Commons. It's just the biggest platform he's ever had in
his life. He's loving it. You look at the thing that Keir. Now, talking about the House of Commons, right? Yeah. When they had the cameras in there, and Musk, and we haven't even gone on that, that'll be second hour, but Musk had that was the weekend. The weekend they'd gone out had the picture with you know, the blessed Elon beneath the picture of Trump, who looked like he was about to stroll from the embers pavilion.
It was in the golf course.
Of course,
right?
It was in the golf course.
You know, the picture.
Yeah, the picture is in the golf course at Mar-a-Lago, and they've got a picture of Trump with a cricket. Now, I don't know if he'd know. Anyway, let's not go there. And then the following weekend, you know, he's like, oh, well, Trump, they're going to give me $100 million, yeah? Yep. And then he goes, you know, and then Elon goes, oh, I don't think, you know, and you look at the, you know, you're talking about old-fashioned banter, but it was a packed house, yeah. And I can't remember which particular. It was obviously one of the Labour front. Oh, it might have been the Scottish. Anyway, I can't remember. Okay, well, somebody made a comment about Farage, and it must be really galling for him. And everybody laughed good-naturedly, yeah. And it pans to Farage, and he's there in his suit and his tie, and he's smiling and laughing, you know. And I, yeah. you know, I do not agree with Farage at all. But I, you know, he is. He's a bit like, I always think the Farage is a bit like, you know, one of the bleeding Battle of Britain pilots. I mean, they're probably great fun to have a drink with, but out of there, they're complete alpha males and egotistical whatevers, and they're a throwback. So, but you could tell that Farage was as happy as the proverbial pork rind in the proverbial whatever.
Absolutely, and he lives for it.
Yeah.
I don't knock that. One of the issues I've always had in my life is because everybody wants to run everybody down. And I go, if these people want to stand for office, that's brave enough in its own way. And whatever you think of them, I don't know anybody who stood in an election to say, and the first thing if I get elected is I want to kill everybody. You know, people don't do that. They genuinely stand, and you may not agree with where they're coming from, but they genuinely stand to try to make a difference that they think people or the country needs. And Farage, wherever he comes from, as soon as somebody said, and this was when it was UKIP, somebody accused him of being an ex-Tory. And he said, I've never been a member of a political party in my life, and I've never supported the Tories. And it's because he was too right-wing to be a Tory. He would have fallen out with them the first day he got near them. But so you can't but admire him for standing up and saying, but I've got a way that I think would be a good way for this country to follow. Follow me.
Yeah,
and that's all he said for the last.
That's having a political news. It's got
absolutely
feeling politically,
and it's also because he knows he's one of the best in the business. He knows how to milk the media.
Good speaker. He's a great speaker.
You know, questionable. He puts on a good show.
I'll
tell you one of the good speakers.
Yeah.
Neil Kinnock, and everybody goes, no, he's just this, that, and the other. Neil Kinnock and Winston Churchill are probably the two best speakers.
Proper speeches, though, rather than sound bites.
Absolutely.
That's the difference.
Because Farage will. And he does a bit more than sound bites.
Yeah.
And he's very good at what he does. He's a good media capturer. There aren't many of them, which is why I go. Yeah, we'll go Starmer. Well, you know, he's had a charisma bypass. Well, that's the way he comes across. But now they're doing surveys and saying, lots of people are saying we're fed up with having the bouncy, chippy, you know, the clown on the surface. We want someone who's probably stayed.
Who would you prefer to have? You know, Clement Attlee, he was not known for his lot of
Clement Attlee, by the way, ran the country when Churchill got all the acclamations, because Churchill was running the war. Churchill never ran the country, he ran the war.
Right then.
And Attlee, Labour, ran the country.
Go live to the lines we go. Morning, call you live on Ontario. What's your name, where are you calling from, what's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Giles, this is Andreas.
Morning, Andreas!
Hello, guys.
How are you doing, son?
I was listening, and I was patiently listening, and I would like to take you back on to what you were saying, Alf, in terms of the participation of younger people in the elections and the lack of participation of a high percentage that you quoted. I don't know how accurate the percentage was, but it's evident the lack of engagement from younger people in politics.
Yep.
And this is my take on it, is that whatever country you're in, the politicians are not hitting on what is really important for them, for younger people. You've got situations, let me just give you the example of Spain. I always take, you know, things to the local politics. But if you look at the things that are making the headlines in Spain, for instance, the celebration of the 50 years of Franco's death, you know, 100 events on that, of course, that's not going to engage young people. What they want to hear is what they're going to do about the day-to-day problems. We've got a massive housing deficit in Spain, where younger people are suffering a lot, where they cannot access decent accommodation. We've got all sorts of problems, but none of the politicians, none of the political parties are giving solutions to the real problems. So that creates disengagement with politics, so they don't want to participate in it because they find it useless. Mm. That's the explanation that I give to that disengagement of young people. Political parties. Now, the problem is that the ideologies have disappeared. In reality, the socialists or social democrats in Europe are not different from conservatives in terms of the policies they can supply the political spectrum. And what happens with that is that they hide from each other any idea that they might have for solutions to real problems because they copy each other. That you can see that from the PP party in Spain, but I am sure that they have things that they want to do, but they hide it because if they present the solutions to some of the problems, the Socialist Party are going to copy it and are going to do it, and they're going to claim the solution as their own solution, when in fact it wasn't. Am I going to on the? Am I explaining myself?
Yeah, I understand.
Modeling myself up with this, that is what creates disengagement from young people. Firstly, because they don't talk about the problems they want to hear about, and it's all hidden behind headlines and things that they are really not that interesting to those people who have real problems.
Okay.
And for the time being, I'll leave it at that.
Andreas, good to hear from you. And nice to hear you're getting stronger every day by the sounds of things, all right?
I think so, yes.
Thanks for the call in. Get a good but thanks
I
for
just,
the call.
I yeah. just need to, right, because right. Andreas... I don't stay on the line while he's there.
I'm staying on the line.
Right. Well, you know me, Andreas. I don't make this stuff up. I was a professional organiser for the Labour Party before the 1997 general election. I worked from 1994 round to 2000, and one of my jobs. How can you say this number of this age people don't participate? It's quite easy. It's statistical evidence that is collected by every government, I would assume, around the world, but certainly in the UK. So what happens is there's the electoral roll, which is where you put your name down to say, you know, I want to be a voter. And in the UK, it's not something you can choose to do or not to do. It's the law. You must be on the electoral roll or there must be a reason. You could go to prison if you're not. So first of all, the electoral rolls there, it says this is how many people live in the country. The second part of going on to the electoral roll is that you must, as part of the census, if nothing else, you have to give ages. To go on to the electoral roll, you must be, I think it was 18. So when the electoral roll is produced, you know the name of the person, what year they went on to the electoral roll. Okay, so it's quite clear that you know the age of every single person who's entitled to vote. Second to that, after every election, when you go into the polling station, they have a list of all the people who are entitled to vote, and they're all annotated. They don't obviously can't put down which way they voted, but they can annotate whether they voted or didn't vote, and that is then kept on a record in whatever else where they keep all the records in central London. So I used to get people, in fact my daughter did it a couple of times. You go to whatever it is, house, Salisbury House, Sainsbury House, whatever it's called, and we had a computer that we used to then copy all of that information, all of those who voted, all of those who didn't vote, went onto our computers. You get a pattern then from that of when you knock on somebody's door, this is part of the training. When you knock on somebody's door and you say, yeah, eventually you ask which way you're going to vote, who are you going to vote for? And they say, oh, well, I'm going to vote Tory or I'm going to vote. It doesn't matter what they say. And you look on your record and on your record it says, well, you haven't voted in the last 7 elections. Because the record shows, the national record that's held shows that you didn't vote. So what we did in the end, because we're trying to win a majority, you don't knock on their doors. You don't knock on the door of someone who don't vote. If they vote, it's a bonus. But you don't knock on the door of someone who doesn't vote and waste your time, you know, trying to find out who they're going to vote because they don't vote. Now, all you have to do is add all that up, and the government does it, and the figures are produced every year, or certainly after every election. You can go to this book. I've got a couple indoors. They're like, I don't know, 100 pages. I'll tell you what you can do. You can do it on, or if you Google it through Wikipedia, you can go onto Wikipedia, and you can find out the percentage of people who have never voted. And you just... Don't just add it up and you go, right, it's this much. When I was doing it in 1996, when we were doing the build-up for the 95, doing the build-up for the general election in 97, we didn't know it was going to be in 97 because it should have been in 96. Right. And my job was to take out all of the people that hadn't voted. We knew. And the Labour Party nationally were saying the figure then was something like 24 or 26% of people under the age of 30 had never voted. Had voted occasionally, never voted. That means local elections, European elections, general elections, never voted.
Coming in on the WhatsApp, they're saying, I don't think it's apathy, I think it's laziness, especially by the young. Oh, I can't be bothered, I'll do it tomorrow. Like, as in, I always say, always vote and always vote for the least worst.
And also...
What Alf, what you're trying to say, the figure that you're giving is quite accurate. I'm not disputing that.
Absolutely. And on top of that, you then went on to say...
I mean, you obviously have got evidence that that figure is accurate.
Yeah, yeah. And you also said...
What we have to... What I'm trying to go to...
Is the reason.
The why.
Okay.
Is the reason why.
But you give...
And the reason why, I mean, it was different... you're talking about elections 30 years ago. 30 years ago, people were engaged with politics in a different way than they are today. People are disengaged with politics today.
No, no, Andreas, not true. It's not true. People are no less disengaged. What you find is young people. Yeah,
because
young people.
You yourself said that that figure keeps growing.
And it will grow.
Election
because
after
it's
election.
Young people.
Because
and then
people, they're not engaging with politics because they don't see politics as useful to their day-to-day life.
I'll come back to the issues.
Because I'm not... Nothing even improves whether the Socialist Party wins the election or the Labour Party or a Conservative wins. They keep having the same problems, so they don't see a point of being engaged with politics.
We'll come on to that, Andreas. I think Giles needs to have a break.
I need to drop a break in, so because I just realised we're actually thundering towards the news at a rapid pace. Andreas,
I'll come back to you, mate.
Listen in your program. So
it's no, it's always good to hear from you, my friend.
Listen in.
Okay, cheers.
Mate. Back after this.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively. Joined in the studio by AFPA. If you want to get your viewpoint across, these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official. Or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Those are the numbers to get involved with. Right then, going to the news at the top of the hour, the national and then the international news, and then going to get back with the second half of Viewpoint. If you want to, as I said before, if you want to get involved, Farage is something that won't go away. Nothing more than a populist who only benefits himself. And also saying that gentlemen's club suppose that gentlemen are involved. There aren't any, mostly charlatans and chancers. Thanks very much. I've told you about the I was a member of Monty's club. And the worst thing, it's true story, the worst thing that has happened to the UK, aside from wars, is Brexit. And we might be talking about that in the second half of the show. But national and international news is up next.
Radio Europe.
Your voice in Spain.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
And we're back for the second half of Viewpoint with you for the next 54 minutes, give or take. If you want to get your viewpoint across, then these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official. Or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Joined in the studio by Alf Brewer. We were just talking off air there a minute ago about yesterday was the 5th anniversary since Britain left the EU. Yeah.
8 years since we made the mistake of assuming that, 51 to 59 vote meant that everybody in Britain wants out of Europe, and we carry on the myth. You know, was it they had a survey, one of them proper surveys last week. It turns out that 55% of the UK, yeah, not England, wants to rejoin the EU.
Yeah.
Bit too late for that.
Just a quick one. This coming in from Helena. please, as usual, Alf is spouting on about Labour. Can you stop him and get on with the programme? After it is called Points of View, it's called Viewpoint. Not a rambling away by Alf. We want more people ringing in. So ring in then, Helena. Ring in. Come on. Let's go. Let's hear from you. Because I am getting to a breaking point with people who are phoning on me and going, you say the number too often, or you do this, or you do that. I don't give a flying what's it, to be honest with you. You know, I'm getting to this point with you. So phone in. Yeah, don't just sit there and send in messages going, nah, I don't, it sounds very professional. Why don't you have a 12-foot albino giraffe on or something like that? Because we can't get one. So, anyway, before you go off and do that, yeah?
Calm down, son.
That.
Calm down. It's not worth it. Life isn't worth that. As Dave put on, always look on the bright side of life. So, when Andreas was
talking... That's just a radio phone-in. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Well, you know, but come on, you know? I mean, if
but also...
I will play Elbow for 4 hours, or I will start reading from the Tibetan Book of the Dead.
But plus the fact, I'm not sure why people would assume that I would turn up and talk about anything other than what I know about passionately, which is the Labour Party. I worked for them. I've been a supporter of them all my life. Why would I talk about anything? And anybody can ring in and disagree with me, by the way.
That's the thing.
I'd love it. When Andreas rang in and he said, well, of course, the issue for the young, you know, we've got this massive housing deficit. That doesn't just apply to Spain, does it? That's the whole of Europe, including the UK. We have this massive... I can't even put my finger on why, but why did every country in Europe all of a sudden stop building houses affordable for young people? But it was right across Europe, and it's massive in the UK. And also, Andreas said, quite rightly, I'm not disagreeing with him, all these parties, they copy each other. That's because the way that politics is organised, especially in Europe, I'll stick with Europe,
yeah.
I'll try not to avoid even just the UK, is because everybody's after the centre ground. So you have to assume that somebody, and they have all these circles of people who talk to people, who survey people, who do, and they find out what the common issues are for the centre-ground people. And it's the centre-ground people who, in the main, vote and give you power. And as I always say, if you haven't got power, you don't make the decisions. You could sit on the side and, you know, throw your stones at those in power. But if you've got no power, you know, sit there and behave yourselves and work to achieve power. So, yes, of course they copy each other with what they're saying. But that's because they're all vying for this, you know, where if you're a right-wing party, you're trying to capture the right of centre. Yeah. If you're a left-wing party, you're trying to capture the left of centre. But everybody's after the centre. So all the issues are the same. And one of the things that you find with the centre ground, they're normally older people who have gone through that, you know, house buying or house achievement or family raising or major education or used the health service. So they are of that older group. So the issues that they come up with are going to be, simply by choice, not what the young wants to talk about, not what young people want to talk about. And every time, if you, you know, stay in with this, every time they try to bring a group of young people together to say, so what are the issues for young people? There's always this assumption that the issues that are being raised by young people are ignored by those people who are in power. And you go, and it's probably correct. If you look at Parliament, with the biggest, you know, swing of let's get rid of the old and let's get some new in, the biggest change of MPs in the House of Commons, and yet when you look around the House, there's still a lot, and I mean a lot,
yep,
of middle stage, 40, 45 blokes. There's a significant number now of women, but you don't see many. I mean, I've got a young friend who's an MP,
yeah.
But he's like, he was an organiser with me in 1997, and he's one of the younger ones. So he's got to be in his 40s, probably in his 50s. And just look around and you go, so where are the young people who get elected? And that's because of the political setup. One of the issues that I've always had, I'm not a great believer in proportional representation because I think it leads to strange governments, or not like Denmark, you know, didn't have a government for years or whatever it is. And I find local government is significantly better because local government in the UK, because they elect outside of London, they elect their representatives on a third basis.
Mm-hmm.
So you're only ever going to change when there's an election a third of the people making the decisions, which means if you're trying to run a long-term project, you're not going to get those violent swings from one party in control to another party in control, which effectively means that they run election campaigns based on what's the middle ground opinion, because they know that after an election, the chances are whatever party was in power locally will stay in power beyond, and whatever they promise to do, they will carry on trying to deliver. So you get much more stable, long-term arrangements made at local level. So much so that that's why I'll say the government, depends which flavour you are, I suppose, that's why the national governments
yeah.
attempt to stymie what happens in local authorities, because a local government will say, we want you to do this, say on caring in the community, and a local government will do something completely different because they have a different philosophical background about how caring in the community should happen. So you'll come to, you know, one borough will provide care homes and another borough will provide none. Some will provide care in the home, others will say you've got to pay for it yourself. So there's a whole raft of differences, and what a national government can't do is say, no, this is going to be the care organisation across the country, which is why you get so many disparities about, you know, my mum was in a care home, it cost her an absolute arm and a leg every week, and yet just down the road in the next local control area, they provided something like 70% of the costs of caring, because that's what they chose to do with the money they raised from their community.
Right.
So, and you go, if my mum had lived, you know, 500 yards down the road, it's exaggeration, but if she lived 500 yards down the road, she would have paid a third of what she had to end up paying to stay in a care home where she lived. And she wanted to stay where she lived because that was the family background.
Mm-hmm.
So I think government at national level suffer from this. They pander, and Andreas is right. They copy each other, they talk about each other the same way, they do the same things, because it's the same old thing over and over again. The country, Spain in particular, Europe in general, needs massive amounts of affordable homes to be built for many, many reasons. So what governments, the European Union ain't doing it. They're not putting money into house building because it's a national thing. You know, the European Union decided to put money out of the European budget into housing, and all of a sudden they get accused of being favourites, you know, favouritism to Italy or favouritism to France. It doesn't work like that, does it? So all the governments of necessity have got to work out how do they take money out of other things. And, of course, what Trump in particular is going to do, and what I was in fear that the Tories were doing, is you take money out of, say, international development or international aid, and you say, we're now investing that money in our own people. You know, we look after our own before we look after others, which effectively is really short-sighted, because it leads to all sorts of world conflict that that technically we all have to pay for in the long term anyway, you know. Ukraine isn't a mistake. Israel isn't a mistake. What's happening in many African countries isn't a mistake. It's all there by design of somebody for something. Mm-hmm. But it all revolves around, and how many times have we said it on the radio? It all revolves around money in the main. Very little of it now. I mean, what Trump is talking about with Canada is that Canada have got to stop drilling oil.
Yeah.
And sending it to the States to make petrol. Yeah. What?
Let's look at, we'll maybe look at that after this break.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Yes, indeed. If you want to get involved with today's Viewpoint, the numbers are...
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Thanks for sending in the following figures. There's a YouGov poll out saying belief that Britain was right to vote to leave the EU forced to a new low of 30%. The question that was asked was, in hindsight, do you think Britain was right or wrong to vote to leave the European Union? So 55% think it was wrong to leave the EU. 30% up, which is down from... around about 47%, I think it was at the high point. That's the latest. That was on the 21st of January this year, that point. Also in there, Britain's in favour... This is, again, the YouGov poll. Britain's favour a closer relationship with the EU, with 55% of the public in favour of rejoining. Britain having a close relationship with the European Union without rejoining the European Union, the single market or the customs unions. 24% were in, 34% strongly supported it, 40%, somewhat supported it. Britain rejoining the European Union, 39% strongly supported it, 16% somewhat. Britain rejoining the single market, 30% strongly, 20% somewhat. Britain further loosening ties, 7% strongly, 12% somewhat supporting it. You hear this again, it isn't the Brexit that we voted for, but what was the Brexit then? Because it was this nebulous thing. It was like trying to define your sovereign nationship. And we, you know, and you can argue that at the end of the day, it was just, you know, it was just a bunch of people who don't like certain people of a certain colour. There you go. Didn't like Polish people doing the plumbing. Didn't like people who were darker skinned than me. Didn't think about the whole situation that you were aiming exactly the wrong thing.
Didn't like all the Romanians because they just don't like the Romanians. Just goes on and on, doesn't it?
Exactly.
One of the things, whilst not coming into the studio, didn't mean to say that I wasn't interested in listening to Viewpoint. I find it interesting and I find other people's views very interesting. And no, I don't always do it. My own thoughts are obviously based on the Labour Party and my background. But in reality, I don't think it matters quite often which government you talk about. But if you talk about politics, somebody said the civil service were politicised under Tony Blair, and these things then grow legs. It's very mythical. You know, the civil service didn't...
The mythical civil service, I like that.
Oh, no. Being politicised is the myth. You know, of course they... And it was the civil service. It wasn't a particular department. It was the whole of the civil service. And it wasn't politicised under Blair. It started under Thatcher because Thatcher was putting, but it wasn't these, as you know, I call them the SPADs, the special advisors. Yeah. Who are, you know, unelected, appointed people by political parties who sit on the shoulder, technically, of the civil servants to make sure that they're following the adopted policies of the party that's in government.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was a big issue about it. So she put in, oh, forget his name, the geezer who was her second in command in...
Willie Whitelaw.
Willie Whitelaw. So he was put in to do a job on the civil service.
Shock and all that.
To make sure that we never ever went back to... Because his prediction was. It was about Attlee as well. Attlee undermined the Churchill bit by using the civil service because, like I said, Churchill ran the war. So effectively, he only works for the War Department and the Defence Department. And Attlee was running the country, so he and appointed people ran all the other departments, so, you know, farming and all that marine stuff. So there was this issue that after the war, because the civil service had been undermined politically, so Whitelaw was put in to do a job. What then was found out, that when Labour come to power under Blair, for the first 2 years, whilst some things were getting done, there seemed to be a lot of blockage through the civil service about some of the issues that Labour wanted to promote and wanted to deal with. So that's when you started to have these, not the odd one or two, hundreds
right.
of these spads were appointed who went in, and their job, they weren't there to tell the civil service what to do. They weren't there to run the civil service. They sat there and they sat in on meetings and things like that to make sure, you know, if the government says, right, we want to build 500,000 houses in 5 minutes, that the committee, whatever it was that was discussing that issue, were on the right, you know, they weren't changing it to, well, we're going to try and build five.
Yeah.
It was to keep the civil service focused on what the government, not what a Labour government wants, what the government is saying they want. And about the same time, someone also said, you know, democracy doesn't work. I don't know who said it. Churchill said it for a kickoff. You know, democracy was the worst form government under any circumstances. But you've got to have something, and you've got to be seen to be doing something. Better to have democracy or a false democracy than a dictatorship or, you know, a communistic style and things like that. So people say these things and others start to believe it, and you go, you just, yeah, I mean, perhaps it isn't in the history.
Well, let's go back to the whole thing about, and it brings us, you know, it segues us into now, saying we needed a man of action. So you see somebody like, you know, Donald Trump going in there on a stage with a big marker pen, signing, you know, to say, look at us, we're doing things right away. It's like Mussolini. He used to leave the lights on in his flat in Rome, so people would think that he was there and he was off boom-shanking his mistresses,
So, but one of even the issues of today, in fact, in Parliament, was it last week, in the House of Commons last week, the Tories were blaming the failure of the Brexit negotiations on the civil service. It was because of the civil service, they weren't doing their job properly, they were dragging their heels, that's why the Brexit negotiations failed, and you go, but you were the government. You were in charge.
That's the will
you
of the
could
people.
Tell them what
the will
to
of the
do.
People, Alf.
Wow, yeah, that's right.
That's a broad way.
That geezer that they brought in, you know, whatever he is now, Lord something or other, who was sent off to Europe to do all the negotiations. Yeah, how much credit has he now got for anything? Because according to the Tories in the House of Commons, The civil service just got in the way of stopping their Brexit negotiations. What an absolute pile of nonsense. But nobody ever comes on. Helena, ring in. Get a Tory to ring in and disagree with me.
But here's the thing. So, you know, Starmer's over there now. Yep. He, you know, playing the Europe card. And, you know, it's talk about being in a rock between a rock and a hard place. Because you've got the media in the UK papers saying, well, this is Starmer going back, you know, and I will go back to crawling back to the EU, yeah? And he's got to deal with Macron. And they're just sitting there going, told you so, you know, this is the whole, and, you know, and obviously they
told you this would happen after you left the EU.
EU.
And it's happening, and now you need to come back. But in real terms, what's Britain supposed to do?
It's supposed to be the Atlantic Alliance.
Come to us and say, can we buy some cars off of you?
What's the thing? It's the Atlantic Alliance. And, you know, two things. I mean, you can argue that, especially in the past 10 years, that spatial, I mean, the quote-unquote special relationship with the States, because we speak the same language, two nations divided by languages, etc. But, you know, in the past 12 years, that hasn't, you know, when Obama came to Europe, he knew which way the wind was blowing on that. He said, you know, back of the queue. Yep. And he, you know, he didn't go first to London like all, you know, presidents had done before that. You know, the situation, the special relationship was at its strongest when, I mean, the loving that was, you know, Reagan and Thatcher.
Where did Obama go?
Where did Obama go? He went to France.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because he knew.
Absolutely.
Because he was an intelligent politician.
France, for many years, because Germany
and the Americans love Paris anyway, so I mean, that's beside the point.
It's true. Yeah, it's true. You know,
they made a film about
I blame
it,
Jane Kelly. Yeah.
Paris,
yeah, exactly.
It was because Germany...
Wall Street Journal used to be... Not Washington... No, what was the European... The European paper, back in the day when we used to get Newsweek in the time in the 80s.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Wall Street Journal. Washington Post was in Paris.
Yeah, but... It was also Germany after the reunification. Even today, are still rebuilding Germany. They've still got to concentrate on what they're doing in their own country because they've still got disparity between the people who were old East Germany and new West Germany. So the mindset then becomes, well, who's the other? Britain always thought they were one of the big powers in Europe. And
they
technically
were.
Technically they were.
Yeah.
But in reality, it was always France and Germany. You know, they were always the alliance. They border each other. They might have fought each other, but they soon made up and things like that. So if Germany are struggling to reunify...
They take over the Alsace. I mean, they've always been fighting about those borders.
Well, of course, but they've been doing that for centuries. It's not happened in the last 50 years, has it? Or 100 years, even. They've been doing it for years and years and years. You know, the French invaded Britain. Did you remember that? Well, no, because it was hundreds of years ago, and who cared anyway, you know?
Well, you would have been a bit fed up if you were in Winchelsea and the French came, or in Ramsgate, and the marauding fleet of Charles the Bald came up the thing.
Yeah, but then we had all the French emigres because
the Huguenots
couldn't
coming over with their lace making.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, what are you going to do about
setting
that?
Up on the south coast of England and nicking all our land.
Clerkenwell, was it Smithfield? Was the Huguenots?
Yeah, they owned that, but when they landed on the south coast of England. If you go to Hastings and around there, there's loads of Huguenot stuff around there because that's where the boats. Remember, that was where the ports were. They didn't sail up the Thames.
Was Midway, the Rochester.
No.
Great naval bases.
No. Now what is now Romney Marshes used to be where they never came over in whacking great big sailing ships. They came over in ocean going barges, and they used to pull the barges up the canals. I think there's only one canal left now because they use it for draining the marshes. But Romney Marshes was just absolutely littered with
Huguenots.
Huguenots, yeah. Huguenots living in mud huts on
really,
the side.
Exactly.
But no, that's where they used to bring all the little boats in because they didn't come in. You can't explain to someone, right. You know, 1500, a four-master sailing ship going up the River Medway.
Exactly.
Wouldn't be noticed.
Of course not. Mm. Where are you looking?
Come over in little boats.
I can see it now. I can see. Don't start on small boats coming across the channel. We've been here all week. The most likely.
We've never been able to stop them
since then. I think I'll do this now.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively. If you want to get your viewpoint across, come on. These are...
ringing!
No, it's... Alf just said to me, they won't ring in now. You shout. I'm not shouting at you. I'm just... It's like, you know, It's the Roman candle. I don't know. You just fling it in the passing. I don't know. Just trying to get a bit of spark. Sometimes I can be the Primark James O'Brien, and sometimes I can be the bargain basement, the 2-for-1, buy one get one free. Howard Stern. There's a thought for you.
Yeah. I was thinking because Dave.
Are you thinking of what?
Dave played.
Yeah.
Eric Idle. Always look on the bright side of life.
Right.
So you go back to, always I go back to the Monty Python, what did the Romans ever do for Britain?
Well, for us, well, apart from the, apart from the Suey,
and of course, recently they're going, well, you know, I mean, Rex was one of them, you know. Go back to the Tories. You go, you've given them less than 2 months. Rex, if you're listening, you've given them less than 2 months.
Careful, he'll be...
Then,
yes.
Less than 2 months, and you expect them to change the world.
Hey, talking of which...
So...
Yeah, go on.
I'll hold it up. I'm not going to read it out.
I have my glasses are somewhere. It's like me. I can't remember where I put... I can't remember
things that... Labour did.
Yeah, okay, there we go.
This 3 months in power.
Right, okay.
And you go, so they haven't done anything, but they've done all this. What they haven't done is what you want them to do.
Haven't stopped the boats yet, though, have they? Especially there's Eugene. Stop the boats.
That was 12 days after coming to power, they were accused of having the highest level of boat people entering the country, as if it was their fault. Yeah, 12 days.
Rolling out free breakfast clubs. A VHS for everyone who's got the great movie, that. yes, in... to the WhatsApps...
So there's loads of things
Here's the thing. And I'm bashing the Tories, whatever.
Bash the government.
I'm not bashing the Tories particularly. I'm just bashing the useless Tories. So looking at the... no, because... did you notice... Did you know? I mean, okay. He's talking about Mandelson. He's not a Tory, but they are thinking him being the possible.
No, he is.
Okay,
as soon as Trump says it's okay,
yeah,
he will be British ambassador to America.
He's not been over there, Mandelson, doing a speaking tour, and it's been very interesting to see former Prime Minister Liz Truss and also Suella Braverman. Last week over there. Yeah, they have a great tendency and fondness for going over to the States and appearing on these, on the chat, the lecture circuit, lecture circuit.
It's the university circuit.
Well, not even that, though. It is the right wing thing, and they're going around. And Suella Braverman was talking about the fact that the UK was going to turn into a Muslim state with Sharia law within 20 years, and it would have labour weapons, and then they had nuclear weapons, and then it would be the biggest strategic threat to the US. And I'm honestly, this isn't 18 coffees talking. This would be the biggest strategic threat to the US, bigger than Russia. And then she said, "It might not happen, but it will."
Yeah,
but all you know,
the sun might not come out tomorrow,
but you know,
but it will.
But you know what that does, don't you? You know what that does, don't you? Because, I mean, because people will hear half that message in the States, and they'll go, ex-Home Secretary, the woman whose dream was to have flights going to Rwanda. That went well, didn't it, hey? Mm. Wasn't that a really great thing to do? Right.
It's only because you wanted a cheap holiday.
I'm not the Primark, James O'Brien. I'm more... It looks like I'm more the Top Shop Tony Blackburn, but there you go. Thank you very much for that. Thank you very much for that. Top Shop Tony Blackburn, I'll take all day. But, yeah, I mean, did you see what I'm doing? And even Nigel Farage, because they said, well, would you consider having Suella Braverman if she wanted to come across into the party? And he didn't exactly... He wasn't exactly going with open arms.
Well, no, of course he wouldn't, because she'd be a threat to his...
At some stage,
the respect will
great enough for leave. Party.
Well, no, Farage owns it, doesn't he? He's the money man. He's everything to it.
Yeah.
But at some stage, that will have to change, and it will change. Which means it will become, I don't know how it must be become like a corporation, you know, with a board of directors and lots of people sitting in board meetings doing it, and then they'll have a chairman of it, but it won't be the owner necessarily. But it's got to change, because people don't effectively, if you vote for them and you elect them, you'd be electing a dictator. And there's no way I can see Britain electing, even by mistake, electing a dictator. Can't see it. Let's... So Farage has got to change, and their Respect Party's got to change.
Right then, going to many of you. Yeah. Okay. So look, a couple of WhatsApps coming in. Thank you for these. Problem is, if Canada say block the sale of oil to the US, it will affect the province of Alberta very heavily and won't bode well. I can't take calls in on this WhatsApp. Listeners, we've only been running this at WhatsApp for 5 years. Problem is, if Canada says block the sale of oil to the US, it will affect the province of Alberta very heavily, and it won't bode well for Canada per se. The most likely way that tariffs do not take effect is if a court issues a temporary emergency injunction that pauses for the implementation. Donald Trump, that is, use of the IEEPA is unprecedented, opening up for a legal challenge. I think too many assumed some tariffs were a bluff to get better deals. Even now, there's delusion that they'll be temporary and they'll be lifted once they've generated a renegotiated trade settlement. Well, you're spot on there. Donito, as you refer to him, has been clear that he sees them as a way to generate revenue. They'd be used to fund tax cuts, again, to be locked in. Probably time to actually start listening to him and come to the realization that he actually believes the nonsense he sprouts, rather than assume there's any rationality behind it. Brexit was sold to us on the basis that it would A, be easy, easiest deal in history, B, save lots of money, that would all go to the... Where is that bus? That would all go to the NHS... keep our unfettered access to the single market. I remember the buccaneer. Somebody used buccaneer. You remember that swashbuckling then? Make it sound like we're a nation of Errol Flynn people. Cut immigration.
The start of Johnson.
Yeah, yeah.
Just remember.
Cut immigration. Has anything ever been more missold? Oh, the Sinclair C5, I suppose. Skia is trying to be the fulcrum between Donito and the EU. He's better off with Europe, given the proximity and the volatility. There you are, yep. Of Donny. Why would you give Bravo or any of those goons airtime? Fair enough. She's as sharp as a marble. Thank you. Bravo is not even a threat to herself. She can't even get to the final of final two of a Tory leadership race. Meanwhile. No, that's the... Okay, that's somebody's coming with Dave's head scratcher. This in Morning Pool. This in the UK media attacking Starmer both ways. The Times criticising that he's not publicly supporting the EU's stance on Trump tariff threats. The Mail attacking him for negotiating closer ties with the EU. Oh, for a Leveson 2 inquiry. We can't take voice calls on the WhatsApp. Thank you. Alf and Andreas are the George and Mildred of TRE, of course.
I'll fancy being Mildred.
You fancy being Mildred, yeah, because of the actor who played George passed away, well, didn't he, at the age of 90?
Yeah, only recent, yesterday.
It's just come on the screen behind us.
Yesterday or today?
Yeah, yesterday, last night he passed away at 92. George and
Mildred. Brian Murphy.
That's all. Hi. Yes, indeed. So that's you and Andreas, who are the Georgian Mildred.
Of course we are.
Of course you are. This one. Hi. So Canada borders Greenland. Greenland is part of the EU, so let's get them to join the EU. Britain then rejoins, and we can all get cheaper maple syrup. I like the way that some of you... Canada borders Greenland. Greenland is part of the EU, so let's get them to join the EU. Britain then rejoins, and we can all get cheaper maple syrup.
I don't think... Greenland.
Part of Denmark.
No, they're owned by Denmark.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're part of the EU because they're owned by Denmark.
Scotland.
Scotland, technically, are part of the United Kingdom, but they are
technically part of
the EU. But they're not an individual country in the EU, or they weren't an individual country in the EU.
Correct.
It was the United Kingdom that was a member of the EU, or the British, who was it, Great Britain and Northern Ireland, I don't know, wherever it was the EU. So Greenland is like a protectorate of Denmark, so it doesn't come under the same EU arrangements. So why don't Canada buy Greenland? Because that would really get up Trump's nose.
He'd probably invade then. The artificial borders.
And everybody thinks that we're all stupid. That, you know, we can see the ice flows melting. And the new biggest alternative way around the oceans
is drill, baby, drill.
No, around the oceans, not the bleeding oil fields. Is the alternative to the Panama Canal is the Northwest Passage, which is going to be
around the Cape, the Roaring Fifties.
The
Magdalen.
The alternative is the Northwest Passage.
Because we've got ice. I see where you're going with that.
And they couldn't use the Northwest Passage because it was frozen over for 7 months of the year or whatever.
Yeah.
Now, because of the melting ice flows, they're talking about having easy passage. You have to ships like the Titanic can't use it, but other icebreakers could use it.
Icebreakers are available.
Could use it. Properly, they're small.
Is that a benefit of global warming then, you think?
And I'll tell you what else is going under the radar. Because of Trump doing all these big, we're going to do this, that and the other.
But
he's put Musk, because you mentioned earlier about he's put Musk in charge of one of his, Homeland Offices or whatever. One of the Homeland Offices is the department that deals with international aid.
Yeah.
So Musk is now put in. And this is the next big thing that's going to happen, because he's put Musk in there, and Musk is the sort of person, as we all know, with Trump's backing, I'm going to do this. And he won't care what bureaucracy or administration's in the way. He's just going to say, I'm doing this. So I'm going to cut the aid to, I don't know, Bolivia, or I'm going to cut the aid to, wherever it is, the Americans. And
they'll just send hats back in protest.
The United States give more in aid than all the other countries in the world put together twice over. So massive. So they're putting Musk in there to reduce it. But, of course, the issue for America is it's not a presidential issue, because the department, the International Aid Department, was set up by the Senate. So there's going to be this big internal political argument.
Mm-hmm.
Musk saying, I'm going to do this, and Trump supporting him, and the Senate saying, you ain't touching it because it's not your province and you can't cut aid. So they haven't cut any aid, but this is where you come back to this. Is this part of Trump's negotiating with the Senate to say, we're going to take money away from international aid, which he can't do because it's the Senate. The Senate allocate the budget, don't they?
Mm.
So the Senate will say, you can't do that. And Trump, somehow or other, is going to take that money away to do what with it? Complete the wall between America and Mexico, or put new border. I mean, they had the Canadian woman on this morning. 0.2% of the fentanyl, whatever it is, the chemical stuff.
Fentanyl
comes in via Canada.
Yeah.
And they want them to spend $11 billion on new border controls to stop the fentanyl.
The same thing with Mexico, but the problem with that is it's fine, but if the United States, as we've seen before,
that was Canada.
I know that, but they're saying that they were going to put these, they're going to do this to punish Canada and to punish Mexico.
Yeah, yeah.
But where's the demand coming from? United States.
Absolutely.
So therefore,
where does the fentanyl come from?
Sorry?
And where does the fentanyl come from?
China.
China. And you go, okay, so you're going to start a trade war with China in the hope, but this is all the negotiating, in the hope that China are going to stop the people who make the fentanyl, which is made in laboratories, stop them from sending the stuff over to Mexico, Canada, wherever it comes in from. And somehow or other, it's going to stop all the fentanyl coming in. And you go, this is people in the States, presumably because they can't get basic medication, are turning to alternative medication. So they're buying the fentanyl because they're painkillers, aren't they?
Yeah, they're opioids, but they're massively strong. Just want to go to a few bits and pieces on this. And thank you for sending in. Greenland is not part of the EU, but its citizens are, okay?
Oh, freedom of movement,
Autocracy, more like. This is Musk, if you can get it, Musk has said, because he's got into the Treasury computers. Somebody said, and this is a quote from Sandy Backham, who said, if you can get into the Treasury computers, you can get into the voter tabulation computers. Ooh. And a rather lovely picture there of Elon just adjusting his cuff like that, going straight out. And he's obviously never knew he was such a fan of Roman history.
What is the voter tabulation list?
You can rig your elections.
Oh, right. Okay.
In 2012, when I was the US ambassador to Russia, Putin shut down the US aid inside Russia. Why? Because their work supported free markets, democracy, human rights, i.e. causes that were threatened by Putin's dictatorship. Shutting down US aid is exactly what autocrats all over the world want. Plus, it's going to have huge, huge implications for reproductive rights, etc., abortion across sub-Saharan Africa, HIV, etc., but you're using your what's it compass to try, you know.
But it's the democracy of America that's going to stop the president from doing whatever he thinks, because it's the Senate that decides the budget, not the president. So, end of story. They've got to convince the Senate of all this. Mm. You're quite right. there's bound to be... Well, that's why they're waiting for their new elections coming up, aren't they? Because they're assuming it's all going to change. It's all going to become Trump-driven. But they're just flagging up to the American people, this is what you've loosed on the world.
This is interesting. With the bloodless Canada and Denmark whiskey war... Where you guys get this from? On Hans Island, 1973 to 2022, each country would take turns to visit the uninhabited island, plant their flag, and leave a bottle of spirit.
Yeah, there's an island like that, isn't there?
This is the island I'm talking about.
In the Baltic. No, in the Baltic.
Okay.
Between Finland and Sweden, there's an island that does that. You can go there and it's all tax-free or whatever. And it's about booze on an island in the middle of the Baltic. I can't remember what my Swedish neighbour told me. I'll ask him again when they're over at the end of next week.
Yeah, okay. In 2022, they agreed to split the 320-acre island in half. So there you go. It can be done. He's already started, and there's another one. He's already started a trade war with China. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, it's been very interesting. There's been sort of smoke and mirrors. People sort of. It's the big. I'm doing something. It's that rather than just getting on and doing it.
Yes, and well, again, unfortunately, who knows? I wasn't a major negotiator with anybody, but I did negotiate with some big companies like Ford. Like the NHS, like lots of big companies. And
so that, one of you the might things, know what you're doing in that case.
Well, you've certainly learned, there's a book, if anybody wants to read it, called The Art of Negotiation. And it would be good for some people just to read it and say, you have to try, which is why the media are having complications trying to decide what Trump is doing. Is he setting up for a set of negotiations? Is this a negotiating ploy that he's using in order to get things altered? For instance, I'm putting tariffs on Canada and Mexico. Oh, they've done something. Mexico and Canada have done nothing other than promise that they're going to do something. Mm-hmm. Like Canada, we promised to do, which they were going to do in any case, because they've got a problem. So what people aren't quite grasping is, it's not the fact that Canada are selling built cars to America, because they sell very few built cars to America. What they sell is car components.
Yeah.
And what happens is, with all these things, if you want a ball race made, I know it sounds really weird, if you want a ball race made, I think it consists of seven different parts. And each of those parts is made by a separate company wherever, some of which are in Canada, some of which are in the States. Yeah. And then to bring it all together, you're going to use this whacking great big bridge, if they've been talking about it now, $285 million worth of goods cross it every week.
Yeah.
And so what you do is you send one bit of the ball race from Canada to America, and they're going to have to pay 25% tax. And when it gets to America, someone there is going to put a ring inside it, and they're going to do whatever they do, and they're going to send it back to Canada. And Canada then go, well, because you've done it to us, we're going to charge you 25%. And then the ball race gets put in, and then the ball bearings get put in, and this thing has crossed this bridge, say, four times, for argument's sake. So it's now cost 100% more just to build this one thing that goes in one car that's going to be sold in Canada. And you just say, which Canadian government is going to be stupid enough to allow that to happen? Which, by the way, American leader is going to stop that, you know, work being undertaken by American companies in the United States that isn't being used on an American car to sell to the American people? It's being used to put into a Canadian car to be sold to Canadians. So who's going to give up that trade? Naturally. So the whole thing, you have to sit down and go, what does it all mean to everybody? I understand when Trump goes, you know, between America and Europe, there's a $385 billion, I think it's billion dollar deficit.
Yeah.
And you go, yeah, that's a bit big. Yeah, he's right to say the Europeans have got to start buying a bit more. And then they go to the UK and they go, so what's the UK? Well, it could be £1 million in deficit or £1 million in the pros.
Right, just quick one. Chaz, come in. Just me. Apologies, Chaz. It was you calling in, so sorry about that. Question for Alf. Have you ever supported a policy lobbied by an opposing party? We've got 2 minutes. That was not his party. I'm curious to know the views of policy politic versus party politics.
Well, I've been an opposer of lots of stuff that the Labour Party were professing. I've been in agreement. For example, when I bought my first house, it was on a scheme introduced by a local Labour council that turned into Thatcher's
buy your own house.
And I was a supporter of that because it allowed young people...
To get on the housing,
Well, not just to get on the housing list, to get on the housing list where they lived. I lived in East London. If all my mates all moved out to Essex, Kent... Yeah. You know, Hertfordshire, Cambridgeshire, because there's no way they could afford a property in East London. Plus the fact, you know, my parents lived in East London and they weren't dying. So the only way to get a property was for a property to become vacant. The only way a property to become vacant is if someone died. So all the London boroughs had what was called a dying population. So, yeah, I was. You don't have to necessarily disagree with everything, but you don't necessarily stand on a soapbox and applaud them for doing things that they should be doing anyway.
This one coming in as well, this is from Paul. Announce tariffs, crash the Dow Jones to make money, announce a delay of tariffs for another 30 days, rinse
make
and repeat.
More money.
He did this last time and he'll do it again. But I want to leave, Alf, the final quote, because I've had some messages in.
Yeah, probably. Good stuff.
So I'd like to leave us with this thought, Alf.
Is it positive?
It's Helena.
All right. Ring in.
Hey?
Ring in.
No. Okay, so, guys, I always look forward to Tuesday and Points of View.
Points of View.
Points of View.
It's on the telly, isn't it?
It was on telly about 20, 40 years ago. Can you just stop Alf rambling on and on about yesteryear Labour and how important he was? We are great. We want points of view. Points of view. On today's topics. He has taken up the whole first hour of the programme. And then, Helena. Giles. I have always listened to your programme and I've heard many great points of view. Because the subject is today's points of view, so you know. Because we have been, I am in first feeling about that, that programme from the BBC. Yeah, so I know I'm going on, but today has been the Alf Rambling Old Labour Show.
Yeah.
True. Where are all your very interesting and amusing callers these days? Regards, Helena. Well, you know, if you build it, they will come. And if you say, if you don't like something and you want to change
it,
ring in. And where's my ginger wig? I've got no idea, but thank you for everybody. This show is Viewpoint.
Yeah?
It'll be replayed Our thanks for your time.
The views expressed on Viewpoint by
Stephen Ritson.
Love it.
Stephen Ritson's up next. That's all right. I mean, I'm going to actually do points of view. I'll see you tomorrow for Let's Talk.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.